this person somehow cooler than D.B. Cooper?
When I think of a heist, the last word that comes to mind is lazy. Don't encourage someone to rob a bank.
Rob a bank.
Welcome to the series premiere of Mystery Files, where we take a deep dive into cases that span from the creepy to the truly bizarre and everything in between. I'm Ryan, and today I'll be forcing my colleague Shane to hear all about the unhinged case of D.B. Tuber. And in the end, you'll have to decide if the mystery is solved or if it's simply a mystery. Know who DB Tuber is?
What's a tuber? Is a tuber a potato?
No, actually, but I'm gonna let you figure that out on your own.
A tuber.
Look, you're in the mystery zone.
Yeah, I guess I already got some
questions.
I'm not
gonna just give you layups. Yeah, write that down. Who's DB Tuber? What's a tube?
What's a tube?
Off to a good start. Shall we get into this? Tucked away in the Cascadia foothills, 30 miles northeast of Seattle, sits the town of Monroe, Washington. With a population of only 16,000, it's a place where people believe in helping their neighbors, but also minding their own damn business. However, on the morning of September 30th, 2008, all of that would change. At 11 a.m., landscapers began to gather at a local strip mall. Each were dressed exactly the same. Work boots, a blue hat, a long-sleeved blue shirt, a fluorescent safety vest, and a protective particle mask. In other words, you couldn't see who they were.
Is this a flash mob?
No. Now, to demonstrate how well this would actually conceal the identity of the wearer, we're actually gonna have somebody come in right now.
And I can guess their identity.
Mystery man, can you please enter?
That's Carter. That's your cousin Carter.
Well, you wouldn't know that's Carter if you didn't know Carter personally.
Toe to tip, that's Carter.
But if you didn't know Carter and you didn't know Carter was gonna be in this vicinity, you would not have guessed that's Carter.
I guess if I saw him on the street, I might not say that. No, I'd say that's Carter.
Imagine you're like turning on like a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carter. That's good.
One landscaper was already hard at work using a pump sprayer on the grass. At 11:05, a Brinks truck arrived on schedule to the Bank of America at the strip mall. Security guard Gerardo Willie Valdez stepped out of his truck to gather two bags of cash and a hand truck with four boxes of coins. After shutting the doors to the truck, Valdez began wheeling his delivery towards the bank. Suddenly, the lone working landscaper dropped their pump sprayer and began sprinting towards him. When the landscaper reached Valdez, they produced a can.
Of whoop ass?
It wasn't a can of whoop ass, but I'll tell you what it was a can of. Before Valdez had time to react, his face was sprayed with mace that would make light work out of a 1,000 pound bear. This guy took a bear mace to the face.
And that's not Carter, right? That's not.
As far as I know, that's not Carter. Also of note, this was in 2008. Carter would be 8 years old.
Mm. Yeah.
And I recall Carter not having that kind of stature at that age. Us Bergaras, we grow late in life. With Valdez incapacitated, the landscaper scooped up the canvas bags of cash and fled across the street towards Eagle Park. The entire crime took about 30 seconds. Across the street, local realtor Mitch Ruth was on the phone with a client as he watched it transpire. When he saw the robber charge the Brinks truck security guard, Ruth told his client, quote, "There's a bank robbery, gotta go," end quote.
There's a bank robbery. Gotta go.
If you saw a bank robbery, would you try and stop it?
No.
And neither would I.
I think people should rob from banks.
What if you saw like someone robbing like an old lady or something?
That I don't agree with.
Would you try and stop it?
No. Well, I mean, yes. Old lady, yes.
You would try and stop it.
I would try to stop someone robbing an old lady. Proceed.
I was just trying to prove that you're a coward, but I didn't.
No, I would stop an old lady from, you know, that.
You realize I'm saying stopping someone from robbing an old lady, not stopping an old lady from robbing
a bank. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Okay. No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay.
No, if I saw someone, you know, punching an old woman, I'd be like, hey, can't be doing that, you know?
And then you'd walk away. Remember that.
I did my part.
Calling the police on his phone, Ruth watched the perp Frogger across traffic and gave chase. While in retreat, the robber stripped off their hat, long brown wig, white particle mask, and shorts. Once the robber reached Eagle Park, Mitch lost them. The last thing Ruth saw was the robber running into the woods with nearly $400,000 under their arm. I was wondering this as I was like putting this together. How easy would it be to have like literally $400,000 under your arms like this?
I mean, it depends what kind of notes we're working with. I would hazard a guess, and I may be way off here, of like 60 to 80 pounds.
And how much do you think that would hinder your movement? I mean, obviously,
not
this
much.
Is
a big, strong guy. I got
well,
big
I was going
to
say this is obviously more of a question for like someone who's an athlete. So this may not apply to you. But I'm thinking that if I'm running like this, like when I want to run dynamic, I need my arms to move like this to help the feet move.
Yeah, but and I bound more like the BFG. So it's because I don't even know that it's necessarily a lot of arm strength in that situation.
Because
you could even, you know. That, and then you're using your shoulders, and then it's just more about the legs.
But then you're very top heavy.
Yeah, but I'm used to that, aren't I?
But you're adding more heaviness to the top. I predict
I know what you're trying to argue here is that you would succeed at this and I wouldn't, but I think you're mistaken. I think you would start crying.
I don't know about that.
Just yesterday, I was sitting on the ground and you were like, well, I can't believe you can sit like that. My legs hurt when I do
that. Okay, being flexible has nothing to do about how fast you can.
And what happened? You said, well, I ran this morning. I said, yeah, I did too.
Within minutes, the police arrived to the chaos at the Bank of America. They were greeted by one of the landscapers shouting, we just got scammed. The police learned that each landscaper had replied to the same Craigslist ad listed from the Clean Monroe Beautification Project. A relatively lucrative 9-day landscaping job paying $28.50 an hour. The ad told all applicants to gather at this specific lot on a small patch of blacktop between Jack in the Box and the Bank of America. The ad specified all workers must purchase safety glasses or equivalent eye protection, ventilator mask, yellow safety vest, long sleeves, and no shorts, along with proper foot protection.
Pretty good gig, honestly.
Well, that's the point.
For 2008?
You gotta remember, this is in the time of the Great Recession.
Kind
of
shitty, you gotta buy your own little masks and stuff, you know, but fun, probably fun to buy
$28.50 an hour at that time.
Cool little costume.
Now that we're in your mind, you see this ad, you're struggling, you're a landscaper, you get there thinking I'm about to have a nice payday, you see a bunch of people dressed like you. Who are these guys? What's your thoughts?
Well, I have been a landscaper, and that's the team.
You gotta also remember, this is a Bank of America, they're landscaping. Not a lot of greenery at a Bank of America.
I will say, that is a pretty big team for what is probably a pretty small lot.
But is it enough for you to be like, what's going on here?
12 is overkill.
And this was the sentiment of the folks there and also of the lead detective who showed up and realized all these people responded to the same ad. Let's get into why that happened. Lead detective Tim Bazell followed the gravel trail the perpetrator had fled down. Along the way, they collected the items left behind. The path came to a dead end at the edge of Woods Creek, a stream less than 2 feet deep. After finding nothing for an hour, despite the use of a helicopter and a canine unit, a patrol officer finally found a yellow and black inner tube 200 yards downstream, hidden under the underbrush.
Whoa, is this person somehow cooler than D.B. Cooper? Because my man Coop, cool guy. Right?
Sunglasses, suit, ordering bourbon.
Yeah, but this guy seems to value the chillaxitude.
That's right.
Of a lazy river.
He has an aptitude for chillaxitude.
Exactly right, mon frere. And I respect that.
And you know what? Can you think of anything more cool than having a high octane crime and then kicking back on a lazy river after?
You're just sitting there with two bags of money, sucking down a little Mai Tai?
When I think of a heist, the last word that comes to mind is lazy. And this guy's a fucking genius.
I like that.
Also found was a torn off shirt, a radio that was Velcroed onto the inner tube, and a steel cable stretched between a tree and a fallen log that the robber used to pull themselves. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, maybe we're not supposed to root for the robber. But pretty neat.
When it's Bank of America, it's okay.
I'm gonna repeat that information one more time.
Okay.
And I'm gonna give you the opportunity to say something.
Okay.
And if you don't say anything, we'll move on. How about that?
All right.
Because you are writing things down, right? Or are you just drawing circles?
I'm drawing a tube.
You listening?
Yep.
Also found was a torn off shirt, a radio that was Velcroed onto the inner tube.
Hang on.
And a steel.
Torn off. Okay.
And a steel cable stretched between a tree and a fallen log that the robber used to pull himself.
Gotcha.
Okay. You're giving me the opportunity to say something that I don't know. Okay,
You're trying to solve a mystery, remember that.
Torn off shirt, Velcro radio, steel cable.
I'll give you 5 seconds.
Sounds cool. Is that what you wanted to say? Sounds cool. We love this guy.
All right, let's move on.
What were you gonna say?
I'm not gonna tell you.
I don't understand.
I'll tell you later. The police had collected little evidence by the time the day's search was called off. Surveillance footage didn't give many details about the perpetrator, except that they were white, tall, and young. There was DNA evidence from the particle mask and wig, but it did not match anybody in the system. When reports of the crime came out, a local radio DJ noted the similarities to D.B. Cooper. But instead of jumping from a plane, this perpetrator had used an inner tube. The name D.B. Tuber was born. It's corkboard time. Let's get into the suspects. Suspect number one, Ellen Dean. One day after the crime, a patrol sergeant remembered a strange visit from a few weeks back. On September 9th, Public Works employee Randy Oshk. I think that's how you say it. Osh.
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 It looks like an Osh to me.
Osh, Randy, yeah. Osh. He called the police. While he was fixing a sewer near the Bank of America, an unhoused man approached Osh to tell Osh that he discovered a robbery kit. Bazell and his partner, Detective Hatch, tracked the man to an encampment along the Snohomish River. The man's name was Alan Dean. When they found him, Dean said, "It's about time you got here."
What is in a robbery kit?
You know, stuff to commit a robbery.
A gun in a bag. A
bag of pantyhose. Slime.
This just sounds like Home Alone now.
No, it doesn't. Probably like a beanie, some fingerless gloves.
Yeah.
An indestructible skull. That's about it, yeah.
Okay.
Originally from the Ozarks, Dean was a 53-year-old felon. Before the recession, he had been making up to $200 a day panhandling. But now he was lucky to make $50, dashing his dreams of saving enough money to buy a car so he could drive to Arkansas and reunite with his children.
Aww.
It's very sad, very sad.
Maybe he achieved his dream, if he's the guy, right? Wouldn't that be a sweet little happy ending?
Maybe.
Give him some sweet quiche.
I like.
Hey, Daddy's here and he's got hundreds of thousands of dollars for
you. It's funny that you'd speak of Daddy because I like how Daddy's thinking right now.
Me, Daddy?
When the police asked why Dean was expecting them, he told them that to keep his mind sharp, he read 2 newspapers a day, had seen the DB Tuber story, and had information about it. Weeks earlier, Dean was begging near the Bank of America. Behind a dumpster, he spotted a radio. As he picked it up, he saw a particle mask, a dark wig, sunglasses, and a can of mace. As Dean realized this was for a robbery, he became acutely aware that his fingerprints were on the evidence.
Oh.
Dean rushed to a man working nearby. Osh! He told that man, "You gonna call the law, or am I?" Osh filed the report. Expecting the police to collect what he found, Dean stayed with all of the materials. As he waited, a silver SUV pulled up. Out of the SUV jumped a young man. Dean told them, "Hey dude, I wouldn't mess with that stuff. I called the law and they're coming to pick it up." The man replied, "What'd you do that for?" The man gathered the items and drove away.
Whoa, that's the bad guy.
According to Dean, of course. This is
Dean is saying. I mean, yeah, okay.
You can't jump to conclusions like that.
I've jumped.
That's old school, like, kid shit that we did on another show.
Remember that?
They remember it. Using the pen Dean had for his crosswords, he wrote down the license plate number. The officers ran the plate number, but what came back shocked them. Suspect number two, Emily Curcio. Doesn't mean anything to you yet.
I was gonna say, I don't recognize the name.
I know.
Seems like a lovely lady as far as I can tell.
Look at that stunning silhouette. The vehicle was registered to a woman named Emily Curcio. Well known in the community, Emily had grown up in Monroe. In high school, she was the captain of the cheerleading squad. After graduation, Emily went to Washington State University, where she was an honors student and received her BA in communications. After college, Emily married her longtime boyfriend, Anthony Curcio. Everybody who lived in Monroe knew the Curcios. In 2004, let's take this one off too, the Curcios bought lakefront property and moved into a 4,000 square foot home. Her coworkers said that Emily was smart, quick learning, and was never afraid to take on the next challenge. She was extremely organized, proactive, and diligent. Her level of detail, organization, and ability to multitask were beneficial to the team. In 2005, she began working in real estate. But when the market crashed in 2007, so did her lifestyle. Their home was close to being
foreclosed. Okay, yep, yeah.
And two of their cars were repossessed. But the little evidence the police had all pointed to a man as the perpetrator, her husband, Anthony Curcio. Anthony's father had been a star wide receiver at the University of Idaho, who opened a landscaping company in town after a career-ending injury. As you can see there, that's doing some landscaping. And there's also Anthony playing football.
Cocaine?
Well, you weren't supposed to see that. Just ignore that. Okay. Ignore that for now. The Curcios were royalty. What do you think about that? Just like the idea of like having an illustrious high school career.
Yeah, I mean, I had a crown in high school, so I get it, you know.
You did. You were Mr. Saxton.
That's right. Saxon.
Like
I was king.
Like Lederhosen?
Yeah. King.
You were prom king too?
No, my best friend was prom king.
Were you homecoming king? There was some other king in there, right?
I had a crown, I had a sash, you know.
Didn't you also go to prom alone?
Yeah.
Anthony was the apparent prince, an all-star wide receiver and homecoming king, like father, like mother, like son. His dedication earned him a Division I scholarship to play football at the University of Idaho, though he eventually transferred to Washington State University to be with Emily. In 2004, he got his realtor's license and began flipping houses. You like that? The houses flipped upside down?
I like that a lot.
That's pretty good. On his first home, he made $250,000. On his second, $160,000. But success was short-lived, as a house he bought took nearly $100,000 more to repair than he had estimated. Then, in 2007, the housing market crashed. Anthony owed $17,000 a month in mortgage payments and had turned to painkillers and cocaine to cope. There's the cocaine. When one of the officers that had gone to high school with Emily and Anthony saw a security camera picture, the officer pointed out that the perpetrator was crouched in a runner's stance. He said, "Anthony's an athlete. There's a strong possibility that's him."
Is that Carter?
Yeah, that is Carter. We didn't have Anthony actually in a runner stance, so I contacted the nearest athlete I could.
It's always
which, of
nice
course,
to see
my,
Carter. Always
is my
nice
cousin
to see Carter.
Carter.
Yeah.
Detective Bazell uncovered that during college, Anthony had been running scams. Curcio would dress up as a mover to steal furniture. Alarm bells started to go off as Bazell thought about the landscaping costume, and yet they had no evidence. The police weighed what they had. Were they to believe an unhoused man living along the river with fingerprints on evidence? Or that one or two beloved members of their community were responsible for this crime?
Well, I guess you'd have to check the bank accounts, right?
Well, obviously, if you steal from a bank, you're gonna probably wash it or not even put it into the system.
Wash it?
Launder it.
Whoa.
That's just what we say
it's
in the
biz. It's cool how you said that.
Yeah, no, it's just you, when you do it a while, you just kind of, like the lingo kind of just becomes you.
Yeah.
Like look at me right now. Look how relaxed I am. Kind of
that's the stance of a money launderer. Have you been embezzling from Watcher
Entertainment? No, but I've been bringing these people down for a while and you kind of just, you know, you develop kind of an air about you after
a
while.
I see. Like, yeah,
you know,
sure,
just
sure.
Ready.
So I'm supposed to guess if it's solved.
Is this
or...
mystery? Jesus, don't you fucking say it. Hey.
What?
You look at me.
I'm looking.
And you look at me too.
All right.
It's on you now. Is this mystery solved?
Yeah.
Or is it a mystery?
I'm gonna hope that it's solved, and I personally think it's one of the curses.
Well, drum roll, please.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Whoa, that's good.
That's from the people upstairs. It's just my wife. This mystery is solved.
Hey, apple pie!
But you're not done yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, I have to guess who.
Who was it?
Tony.
We'll find out.
So, the police suspected Anthony Curcio was their guy, but they needed Anthony's DNA to try and match the DNA from the mask and wig. While the FBI trailed Anthony, they hit the jackpot when Anthony Curcio threw away a Gatorade bottle full of chewing tobacco spittle. But as they awaited the results, Anthony went missing. Soon, they got information that Curcio was in Las Vegas. Typical. After 3 weeks, Detective Bazell got a call from the lab. They had the DNA results. It's a match. Anthony Curcio's DNA is on the items. Meaning, you were correct. Anthony Curcio is DBTuber.
I mean, I guess I'm pretty smart.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very clammy hands.
Yours are way clammier than mine. Actually, these are dry as a bone.
Maybe it was me.
Yeah.
On November 3rd, 2008, Anthony had arranged to hand off $17,000 to a friend in a Target parking lot. As Curcio stepped out of a Range Rover, the police swarmed with AR-15s. They shouted, "Get down! Get down!" Anthony shouted back, "This is slander! Do you know who my parents are?"
He's a Nepo baby.
Now, I'm gonna pause this right now. Remember earlier when I had you, I tested you and I said, "Hey, can you write something down if these things jump out to you?" I'm gonna repeat that information one more time.
Okay.
And I'm gonna give you the opportunity to say something. You wanna read the things you wrote?
Torn off shirt, Velcro radio.
Now, if you were an astute investigator, Velcroed radio would tell you something. He wasn't working alone. Because who are you radioing if there's no one but you?
Another person.
You missed it. Further investigation would show that Anthony had two accomplices, a getaway driver and a warehouse owner who stored the money. But after only a couple weeks, $220,000 was all that was left of the $400,000.
Nice.
Due to a deal cut with police, only Anthony Curcio was charged with robbery and witness tampering, serving 6 years in prison at the age of 28. Anthony's wife, Emily, shockingly had no idea of the crime.
I mean, that's not a shock to me.
Well, I mean, they live under the same household. I tell my wife everything. I imagine you tell yours as well.
Yeah, but you're also not a robber, thief.
Well, I mean,
a no-good Nick.
Yeah, but if they're down on their luck, right?
He's probably like, "I better do this to save my wife."
I just find it hard to believe that he could pull it off. Like, he's like on Craigslist doing the post, buying all the, buying the outfit for himself.
Yeah.
Going down there, setting up the wire at the river. What's he saying? Like, "I'm going out for a drink with the boys, Monday through Friday."
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure, yes. It sounds like he's just lying to her a lot.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, I agree.
Emily shockingly had no idea the crime occurred until Anthony's name appeared as lead suspect on television. If you're watching Cheers and all of a sudden we get a breaking news update on TV that that Sarah has robbed a bank.
I'd be like, hell yeah. I probably helped her plan it.
That's what I'm saying!
Yeah.
Actually, just this is a subset question. Who would you be most surprised of between Steven and myself if you found out one of us robbed a bank?
You.
I respect that.
Do you not feel the same way between me and Steven?
I would be very surprised if you robbed a bank. Yeah. Steven?
I would be surprised if he hasn't robbed a bank yet.
We're talking about a guy who makes shows based around
this
the concept
sick and
of
twisted.
Money?
He's got to feed his
hunger.
And the hunger knows no bounds.
And his Tesla's not going to charge itself.
It sure isn't. I see him out there walking. He's pacing like a lion in a zoo.
He's probably robbing a bank right now.
Mutters. Yeah, I haven't seen him in a while.
The police gave Alan Dean, if you recall the unhoused man, a reward for his help. With it, Dean bought a Nissan Pathfinder.
Hell yeah.
Great car.
Great car.
Dean told them, quote, "I'm going back to see my kids again."
See, now this is what I hoped for. That's lovely.
You got it. You got your happy ending. He wasn't a criminal. He helped solve a case. And now he's got a great reunion with his, kids.
And for the record, I trusted this man the whole time.
You did. And that's on record.
Yeah.
You don't even have to say for the record.
For the record.
It's on the record.
Print it.
At this point, the statute of limitations has run out on the crime. Anthony Curcio is the only one to ever be charged in connection to the heist, despite Detective Tim Bazell's personal appeals to both federal and county prosecutors to press charges on the others involved. In prison, Anthony got sober and started to draw children's books.
Aww!
After being released from prison, he became a best-selling author with books such as, oh my God, I can't believe he wrote this book. Stephen Curry, The Boy Who Never Gave Up, and My Daddy's in Jail.
On the plus side of the scale, if you're gonna rob a bank, hey, do it. You know, no big deal.
Don't, you can't say, you don't encourage someone to rob a bank.
Rob a bank.
Today, Anthony and Emily Curcio are still together, living in Washington. He gives talks to schools throughout the U.S. on the dangers of drug abuse and how to make positive choices. Remembering the heist years later, Anthony said, quote, it was the perfect crime. You know the funny thing? I grew up in Monroe and never once saw a homeless guy. Maybe he was some kind of angel, end quote. If Anthony's crime had been a little more perfect, this may have truly been a D.B. Cooper sequel. But in making crucial mistakes, he gave himself away, and we can officially call this mystery solved.
I'm happy for these folks.
Look at them. Look at those two kids.
I'm proud.
They're happy.
Yeah, they got a gazebo back there.
And also, the heist, I hate to say it, fucking ruled. And it was a funny heist.
You know what? I'm glad he's proud of it. Again, rough to pepper spray someone, but he should be proud of it. It was the perfect crime.
It had the trifecta for me. And I don't even know what, I'm gonna make these 3 points up as I go.
Number one,
victimless essentially, kind of.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Number two, funny outfits.
Sure.
Gotta love funny outfits.
Yes.
And number three, it involved a lazy river.
Yeah. And let's be honest, a bit romantic.
It is a bit romantic.
He's doing it for his lovely wife.
For his family and his kids because they made a couple bad choices on real estate. Who hasn't done that?
Hey, look, the housing collapse, you know, that made people do crazy things, I'm sure. And next time we're up in Washington, maybe they'll invite us over for dinner.
Make it happen. Open invitation from you to us. That's not how those work, but
we invite you to invite us.
Exactly.
Or they can come hang out in our basement.
That's true. Not a lot of air in here, and
no.
The big guy farts a lot.
Oh, cool.
Like, do a chink.
Okay.